Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the PBSC podcast. Steve Moore and Mark Castleman here with episode 218. Kind of an interesting title. We're getting aggressive in these titles these days. You know, we're going edgy, as edgy as a couple of therapists go. As an addict, are you, quote unquote, weaponizing your weaknesses as a reason to not commit to and live in, quote, real recovery?
Oh, man. And we, just so everybody knows, we did not create that title lightly. It kind of really came from the submissions that came into us, but we did talk a lot about the risk of triggering really deep shame in the addicts listening with that kind of a title. And then us risking receiving a digital flogging from people. But since we have vowed in our recovery and healing to always be as authentic and lean into the hard and do whatever we have to do, we have taken this on. And we want everybody listening to know that this is very much out of love and concern, because one of the primary reasons we do PBSE and also our Dare to Connect program, we really, really want to help save all of you from doing this stuff all the wrong ways. Don't do what we did. It's kind of our model. So we're talking, we talk passionate today, which we will. We always talk passionately. But in our passion, please feel our love and concern for each one of you.
For sure. No, and Mark speaks the truth. The goal here is not to shame anybody today, although we have no control over that. How this impacts you is on each individual. But the goal is to awaken a sense of accountability for those who are needing to hear it, because Mark and I needed to hear this many times. So we hope that that's the way that this kind of comes off. This is sort of a pick-me-up podcast that you can pull out when you're finding yourself kind of in that Eeyore mode. So we're excited. And it actually includes a really good clip from one of a really awesome D2C session that we had recently. So that's just kind of a quick little teaser there. Anyway, we're doing something a little different today. We're combining a couple of questions. We're so far behind on questions. We've got such a backlog. We actually had two come in that were fairly similar. And so I'm just going to kind of paraphrase these really quick. I just give kind of the real quick gist of these. So here's situation one. My husband and I have been together for several years. In November 2022, I found out he'd been in emotionally cheating and invested in or engaged in porn our entire relationship. That continued through almost the end of the year. I've given him feedback on what I need from him to start trusting again. And he tells me that I'm putting too much on his plate, that he can only remember to do so much at once. So that's the question, right? He's been engaged for several years in this. She's found out about it. By the other accountings that we got from that submission, he hasn't really played out or moved forward in terms of creating the safety needed. And when she asks him for what to do, or asks him how she can either help or gives him feedback on what is needed, what she's needing for safety. Says he's got too much on his plate and it's putting too much on him, and it's too overwhelming.
Yeah.
And then he says he can only remember to do so much at once. And then she says, in my opinion, showing love and respect should come naturally in a relationship. Excuse me. And then she asks, how do I navigate this? And is it a lost cause? And then the second one is somewhat similar, different challenge, but similar concern from a partner. This is basically what we have is a partner wrote us in and wrote that her husband is struggling with a couple of different health challenges. She describes those as ADHD or attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder and mild autism is what she quotes. But he can focus and show deep emotion in various life situations. She says, however, he struggles to do that for his partner whenever she shares her pain, however, and her desires about recovery. He oftentimes responds, quote, well, what if I can't do that? What if I'm not capable of that? Unquote. It feels like he's already using this diagnosis as a crutch, an excuse for his poor thinking patterns.
Mm.
So she sees this kind of show up selectively for him, right, in different situations. And then, so we have one where we have some mental health disorders, diagnosed mental health disorders that are describing that the one act is reporting is disabling in many ways his ability to be emotionally vulnerable and open. And a second one saying that he becomes, when she expresses needs or vocalizes what she's looking for safety, despite him leading out on the betrayal, he's struggling to lead out in any sort of recovery and says that he's, quote, having too much put on his plate and he's feeling overwhelmed with any of that stuff.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah, we could both really relate to what was described here because we've done both. As I read both of these, I have huge empathy for the addicts involved here. We don't know a lot of details about them, but from what their partners sent in, you know, I grew up, I think out of the womb, struggling with mental health challenges. Of course, my 24/7 deep addiction that lasted for decades. And that, of course, all started when I was about age 12, 13. But in addition to that, for a good 3 decades of my life, severe deep depression, severe anxiety and panic attacks, relationship attachment disorders, 2 nervous breakdowns over the decades, Tourette's syndrome for a lot of years, bipolar issues. I mean, I could go on and on. I kind of say I came from a family who's kind of got the grab bag of mental disorders. I grew up among very mentally ill people. And so I was just in an environment where we struggled with this stuff all the time. And one of the things that I was taught as I grew up from people who were doing the best they could to cope, frankly, some pretty sick people, there was a tendency to weaponize these very legitimate, very real struggles. And now that might sound like an oxymoron for me to say that, weaponizing some very legitimate struggles and disorders. Both of those realities can coexist. You can have some real diagnosed challenges and yet also weaponize them, also kind of use them as some excuses. And I actually did that a lot as a way to cope. And I was very confused about the differences between reasons and explanations for things versus excuses and avoiding accountability for things. I had a tough time learning the balance on that. And so, you know, the first thing I had to open myself to, which was a very valuable part of my recovery and healing, was to start letting go of the shame and the hopelessness of those challenges and to start to understand, how did I get here? What were the various things that landed me in this place that I'm in? Those explanations are very important, but how can I then take that and not allow it to be weaponized by me or to allow me to stay stuck? How can I recognize where I am in reality and what I'm struggling with, but also move forward? Right? How do you do both of those things at the same time? And so we recently had an episode in the Dare to Connect program where we were talking with the addicts in D2C about this very issue And we talked about this, the differences between reasons and explanations versus excuses. And we actually wanted to, have we ever done this before, Steve, on PBSC playing a D2C excerpt from an actual live session in Dare to Connect?
We did a couple of months ago. I think we released an episode that really spoke to something.
We did. Yeah.
We don't put a lot of DDC content up. That's usually behind the Dare to Connect wall. So no, this is pretty rare.
Yeah. So we're gonna play a clip for you right now about how this is an actual raw clip from one of our live DDC sessions where we talk about this, weaponizing of weaknesses versus owning them and being accountable and moving forward. So here's that clip.
Let's talk about two concepts, reasons and excuses.
Right? Reasons and explanations and excuses. Yes.
Yes. And the simple note behind that is reasons are always valid. Uncovering the reasons behind my addiction, Mark's addiction, why we do the things we do is extremely valuable. One, because it's healing all in of itself. Because context and understanding and shining a light on something reduces the fear around it and the other emotions around it.
Yes.
But those also oftentimes give us valuable information in terms of what do we need to do. Reasons are, so in that sense, reasons are extremely valuable to explore. Excuses, on the other hand, where reasons give context, excuses diminish accountability. And we don't do excuses in Dare to Connect, period. Mark and I don't do those in our clinics. We don't do those here. And it's not because we're old school parenting style hard asses. It's because what you don't own, you can't change. That's the simple reason. What you don't own, you can't change. I mean, Mark and I, we'll just use ourselves as an example. I mean, Mark has described recently, because of this IFS model, he's been able to get into some of the really just, the clinical term would be batshit crazy stuff that happened with him as a kid. I had cancer as a child twice. My dad passed away in a plane crash suddenly out of nowhere one day in his mid-30s. You don't have to, those are exceptional examples, but everybody's story is just as exceptional as that. But we'll just use that as an example. My dad, dying in a plane crash, absolutely is a contributing reason to me becoming an addict. The episode of the loss that happened, the abandonment that occurred, the trauma that was a part of that, and the fact that it happened right before I hit sexual curiosity were all horrible factors.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a pretty safe bet that I would not have ended up either in sexual addiction or at least as grievously involved in it had that not occurred.
Yeah.
And those are reasons. In no way, shape, or form can I use those as excuses to say I can't change, or I deserve to be an addict, or my wife should bear with the pain of that, or any of the other things that I used to tell myself. Because those things are important. Those reasons are important for me, both in my recovery journey, but also to have compassion with myself. Compassion ends where responsibility begins. And the same thing holds true for a partner.
Yes.
Right? You partners all the time. I mean, there's the three C's, I think, in Essanon that they talk about. I'm going to slaughter this because I haven't looked at the book in a minute, but I didn't cause it. I can't change it. I can't something, right? But at the end of the day, what is the mantra after that? I am the only one that can decide what to do with the damage that has been caused to me.
Right.
I am in sole control. No one else is in charge of that. He, as much as he may even want to, and God knows Mark and I, and probably many of your husbands have been that guy who have begged and pleaded with their higher power or with their spouse, I just want to make this better for you. Trauma always is and always will be a one-way street.
Yeah.
We have to, compassion is what we derive from reasons. Accountability is where we go in avoiding excuses.
Right.
So those are my thoughts about it.
Yeah. There's a couple of questions that have come in the chat that are right in this space, Steve. This first, let's address this one about weaponizing internal family systems as an addict. So here I'm gonna make this brief because we have to go on to these other questions. But here's where we're gonna take you into a more advanced view of internal family systems if you're ready to receive this. If I, as an addict, am taking internal family systems and using my exiled parts as an excuse for why I engage in my behaviors, and then I use that to tap into your compassion as my partner and say, you should understand that the reason I do these things is because that fractured little boy that was abused or whatever, and you should understand that, and that's why I do this. When I take that approach, do you all recognize that that is not my true self in the driver's seat in that moment? Who is in charge in that moment that I am weaponizing IFS? It's one of my exiles who's now using a manager or a firefighter strategy to try to stay safe in that moment of confrontation. I'm not being me when I weaponize IFS. I've allowed one of my exiles to take the driver's seat. Weaponization is a protection strategy from way back. Is this making sense?
Yeah, no, I think you're hitting the nail on the head.
Yeah.
At least the chat thinks so.
Right? So. That's what's happening. Now, on the other side of the partner, one who is it? Gabagool, which I love that after Gabagool. How can we listen and acknowledge the exiles, I'm assuming in our addict partners, but not come off like we are their mothers? I feel like I always end up coddling and lecturing. Again, what's the point I'm making right now? If you find yourself in the face of your addict partner, weaponizing his exiles, and then you, in reactive response, coddle and nurture him or lecture him, what is now in the driver's seat for you in that moment? One of your exiled fractured parts using its manager firefighter strategy. You're not in your true higher self, which would do what? Would show some compassion, but hold boundaries.
Yeah.
See, it always goes back to the exiled fractured parts being in control. Whenever we have these questions, it's like, oh, dang it.
Well, and again, that division, right, between the compassion and the accountability, that's what always has to be maintained, no matter the nature of the relationship. I have a colleague who, some time ago, we were out to lunch, and he was telling me a story about how he had a male client. He's a male as well. He had a male client, and they'd been working together for a while, so they had pretty comfortable boundaries with each other. And this client came in one day just devastated, and I don't remember why, and it doesn't really matter, but just had an awful, abysmal week. And my colleague really connected and empathized with him and did something that therapists don't oftentimes do, but it felt right for him. He's that kind of a therapist where if it feels right, it feels right. He got up out of his therapy chair, and he went over to the couch where the client was sitting. He sat next to him, he put his arm around him, and they both just sat there and cried for 10 minutes.
Mm.
He didn't say a word.
Yep.
And he cried with him.
Not very therapist-y,
right? At least what most of us think about most of the time.
He got down in the pit with him, didn't he? He got down in the muck.
He didn't say anything. And for 10 minutes, they just sat there. Mm. And then afterwards, they talked for a second. He went back to his chair and he said, I am so sorry that it's been such a hard week, and I really do feel your pain. But then he looked at him immediately and he said, what do you want to do about it?
There you go.
I think that's how that looks. Right. And now obviously with a partner to another partner, that's a little bit different, mm-hmm. but the concept is the same, right? We can, and this is kind of what I was alluding to at the beginning of this discussion. This is where recovery gets really beautiful, is when we learn to healthily separate accountability, you know, from compassion, right? When we develop out that capacity to be able to say, and when we develop those internal boundaries, it allows a partner to sit with their addict partner or vice versa, the way that so many of you wives want to, but are scared shitless to do. Because you don't want to enable him. We hear this from partners all the time.
Yeah.
I want to express this stuff with him, Steve, but if I do, it's immediately going to take a mile. Holy crap, that is a big chat submission. We'll have to look at that in a second. That just took over my whole screen. But that's right. But when you, but as you as spouses begin to exercise and practice out those boundaries, and your partner becomes better able to receive it, you see how that allows for the love to flow without taking on their crap. It's a beautiful thing. That's how a partnership is truly supposed to work at its core. Now that takes a lot of practice. That isn't something that happens over time or overnight. And there's a lot of trial and failure that happens with a lot of trial and error. And there has to be, you know, repeated ownership and going back. Penguin P in the chat says that's love. I would agree. That is real love. I would agree. That I would argue is the highest form of love. In the Christian dogma, that's what most people would argue would be Christ-like love, right? Where total compassion and total accountability come together.
Right. Because what if we talked about in the past here in D2C for a long time, there's a misconception in our cultures that confrontation is not loving someone. And I've worked with a lot of clients where they've grown up with this attitude and they'll say to me, "Oh, Mark, I don't think I could ever say that to him. Or I don't think I could ever face her with that." And that's in our coupleships, it's in the workplace, it's with our kids, it's with friends. And my response has always been, once I learned this and started working it in my life, I said, "Well, let me ask you a question. Do you really love this person?" "Yeah, I do." If you never confront them, this person, with what you're seeing and what you're noticing in them, and you always go along to get along, what chance do you think there is that they will change this thing that you're seeing? And what's always the response? "I don't think there's any chance they'll change it." So if you really love this person, what do you want for them? To be their best self, to evolve, to transform, to become happier, wiser, more fulfilled. So can that happen without your confrontation?
Well, guys, what'd you think? Pretty crazy clip, huh? There's a lot there. That was a great day in Dare to Connect. We were really having a good morning. And that's pretty indicative, by the way, of what we do in Dare to Connect every day. For those who have not yet taken the step to check out Dare to Connect, if you like the podcast, if you like what you see here, if you like what you hear, you will love what you see and hear at Dare to Connect. 30 hours of content a month. Support groups, groups throughout the week for addict spouses and couples, assignments, handouts. I think we've done probably a dozen handouts in the last 2.5 weeks on Dare to Connect right now.
There's been a lot of them as we've been doing internal family systems. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're serious about your recovery, if you are wanting to take this to the next level, if you're tired of being stuck where you are or moving at the pace you are at, may we lovingly suggest that outside of one-on-one therapy, and maybe in some ways more so, Dare to Connect would be the solution to choose. Yeah. So please give that a look, give that some thought. Take a look. There's a 2-week free trial you can claim on that to come take a look at what that's all about risk-free at daretoconnectnow.com. But yeah, Mark, this was quite the segment. And I remember this was actually just last week when Mark and I filmed this.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember really clearly, you know, when we were getting ready for production here today, thinking that would just be such a good soundbite because, you know, this, I love how we talk about the difference between reasons and excuses. And also specifically, I love, and I think this is probably the best answer that we could give to all of you gentlemen who find yourselves resisting, you know, that feedback from a partner, if it is healthy feedback, or are, I guess you could say, averse, right, to the critique or the criticism. Mark and I can really connect with why and where that comes from. A lot of wounding, a lot of trauma, a lot of shame from the past. But as if you pick up nothing else from that clip, we hope that you will pick up the role that accountability always plays in a truly loving relationship without exception.
Yeah, for sure. And if we, you know, so if we start to talk about what are the basics with regard to recovery, with regard to helping to create an environment, not only where I can get sober and where I can start to work on the issues that are under my addiction, how can I also start to create an environment where my partner's healing has the best chance? I mean, that healing is up to her, but I can create an environment that is conducive to that healing. And very especially, how can I start making small daily deposits into our relationship trust account? And that's really what these partners who were writing in, what we heard them saying is, I don't expect him to be perfect, but I do need to see some effort. I do need to see some genuine heartfelt intention. If he cares about us, I would like to see something happening. And yeah. So what are the bare bones basics about, quote, seeing something happening? Because guys, we can talk the words, and I know the guys that were being described here. I'm not saying they didn't have some good reasons, some good explanations. It is easy to get overwhelmed. It is easy to get too much on your plate. And I know, as I said earlier, all too well about the role that mental illness and mental struggle has and how it can affect what we're able to do. But how do we, with all of that being there, and we're not saying it isn't, but with that being there, how can we also make the efforts to move forward in recovery and healing these relationships?
Yeah. Well, and we know that clip kind of speaks for itself, guys. And like Mark said, we are sensitive to those things. But here's the big thing that I wanted to make sure we cover here as we're getting close to wrapping up. And it's this. Reasons oftentimes can contribute to the obstacles that create either failure or maybe missteps in the process, right? When we do recovery, rarely do we do it perfectly. I know with my clients, and I know Mark would say the same, In fact, I told the guy just the other week when I gave him an assignment, I told him, plan on screwing this up.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to screw this up this week at some point, I guarantee it, right? But there's learning to be had from those screw-ups, and the effort is part of the growth and the learning of getting better with it, right? And that's probably the biggest thing that I want to say is, and as a guy who used to do this all the time, you cannot use reasons for potential failure as an excuse for lack of execution or follow through. If you screw it up, you screw it up. If you fall and you need to get back up again, then so be it. If you have a hard time, you know, or you get stuck or you get lost or you clam up or you get reactive or whatever, that is something that a therapist like myself or Mark can work with. That is something that most of the spouses that we work with can work with.
Yeah.
What we can't work with is predetermining your own destiny and preempting your own failure with excuses or preconceptions about what will be or what won't. Right? That doesn't work well in any sort of changing process. And to be really candid with you, I know very few spouses who would ever be attracted to that.
Yeah.
What is a spouse attracted to? She's not even attracted to perfection. Again, the vast majority of spouses that Mark and I work with, I'm talking 99% plus, are not looking for their husbands to follow through perfectly or execute perfectly. They're expecting them to give their very best. And when they screw it up, to be accountable, make changes, and try again.
And it becomes really hard. And I know my wife expressed this as she started to speak her truth, and I provided at least sufficient safety that she could do that. She said, you know, I know you had a really tough childhood. I know that you've suffered with a lot of mental illness issues. And she was always supportive of that. But she said, I did see you excel and put forth really great effort when it was stuff that you really cared about. Hobbies, work, hanging out with my bros. She did see me be able to do some pretty dang good effort in certain areas of my life. But then when it came to this recovery and her healing environment and making deposits into the, you know, to the trust of our relationship, she would see me let down and kind of disappear or make excuses, or my effort would diminish significantly versus when she saw me really care about stuff. And that was hard for her to figure out. Well, I know you're not completely debilitated because I see you really shine in certain things. Why not here? I kind of assumed that this was the thing you cared about most, us. So it was hard for her to try to find why that was with me. And so we want to start to put forth, guys, just start somewhere. Start with some really simple steps. And the key is to start that and stay with it. Consistency, consistency, consistency. Even if it's just small. Even if you're just starting out to consistently attend a 12-step group each week. Maybe you just start out with some consistent little daily check-ins as a couple. Right? Just a little bit of some consistent journaling, 5 minutes a day. I mean, if I were to add up all the consistent little things I did in recovery, probably time-wise on a daily basis, they didn't all add up in total to more than an hour of effort over 24. But my wife seeing me making those little efforts and being consistent in them and committed to them, which meant committed to us or her, made all the difference in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Guys, we have nothing but love for all of you and you partners who are also involved on this journey. We know it's a journey. We know there are ups, there are downs. And we know everybody needs a quote unquote, I guess, pick me up or a, I guess, a shot in the arm or whatever, you know, a wake up call or whatever the case may be. Hopefully there's an element that can be of benefit to someone out there listening for that today. Who maybe just needs that little push to either get back on track or to try again or to maybe take the first shot for the first time ever.
Yeah.
As Mark said, we'll end with what we started with. Please don't reinvent the wheel. We just speak from passion about this because we're you. We don't speak from an ivory tower of seniority. We speak from a place of being in the trenches, just in the same place, reverse 5, 10, 20 years. And we were in the same boat, doing the same stuff, struggling with the same challenges, operating with the same thinking errors. So please learn from us and don't feel like you need to repeat that. Again, guys, we'd love to have you come and join us on Dare to Connect. You can check out the free trial there at daretoconnectnow.com. Or if you would like to send us submissions for addressing, I guess you could say, here on the podcast, you're welcome to send those. There's a contact form down at the bottom of the pbscpodcast.com page where you can send those, or you can also search our ever-growing list of podcasts. Mark does an awesome job of creating blog posts each week about our podcast episodes, and you can access those by clicking the blog link up in the menu at the top of pbscpodcast.com and do a search on topics there if you're looking for something specific as well.
Yeah. So if you're thinking, well, what are the basics to recovery? Man, go into the PBSE blog and put in recovery and you'll see probably 20 podcasts come up where we go through the basics in detail.
Mm-hmm.
So a great place to start.
Absolutely. All right, guys. Well, hey, have a great rest of your day and we will catch you next time.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye. Everything expressed on the PBSE podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.